without any preamble, we will go right into the text. And we'll start right here.
Error and the ego. The abilities you now possess are only shadows of your real strength. All of your present functions are divided and open to question and doubt. This is because you are not certain how you will use them and are therefore incapable of knowledge. You are also incapable of knowledge because you can still perceive lovelessly.
And let's remember that the word knowledge refers to what I have described as knowing, with a capital K, the direct experience of truth. Not the direct idea of truth, but the direct experience of truth, which is to be experiencing the Father's point of view, letting that mind be in you, which is the Father's mind, and claiming no right to a mind of your own. Continue.
Perception did not exist until the separation introduced degrees, aspects, and intervals. Spirit has no levels, and all conflict arises from the concept of levels. Only the levels of the Trinity are capable of unity. The levels created by the separation cannot but conflict. This is because they are meaningless to each other.
You see, the minute you decided to try to have a point of view of your own, to see things your way, and you turned your back on the Father, turned your back to the altar, and took what you thought would be an independent stance, it caused you to introduce into your experience a perspective unlike the Father's. This perspective was nevertheless a perspective on reality, because you didn't have anything but reality to experience. When you introduced, therefore, a biased perception, a twisted or altered perception of reality, you created an illusory, a distorted experience of it. Now, if you look at your distorted experience and believe it, you are in error. And everything you are seeing is erroneous. Literally, waking up is coming back into your right mind, where you're not claiming a private perspective of your own, and where you stop introducing this bias or twist on reality. The illusions that you choose to believe, because they are not real, are meaningless. Because only what is real is meaningful, with a capital M. Let's continue.
Consciousness, the level of perception, was the first split introduced into the mind after the separation. making the mind a perceiver rather than a creator.
Now I'm going to interrupt here. Mind, with a capital M, is conscious. Consciousness is not an illusion. And this is important to understand. What this is referring to is the personal private mind each of you thinks you have when you've turned your back on the altar. The level of perception is what consciousness is when you have dissociated yourself from the Father. We could describe it as human consciousness versus divine consciousness. Here it's referring to the human consciousness. It says consciousness, the level of perception, was the first split introduced into the mind after the separation, making the mind a perceiver rather than a creator. Continue.
Is it possible to be conscious at two levels at the same time, simultaneously?
No, it is not, because either your back is toward the altar or your back is away from the, you have turned toward the altar. They are exclusive. That doesn't mean that you can't have moments of clarity, moments of revelation, and then seem to turn back once again to your habitual way of perceiving and reacting to what you perceive.
So it's a matter of focus or attention.
That is correct.
Consciousness is correctly identified as the domain of the ego. The ego is a wrong-minded attempt to perceive yourself as you wish to be rather than as you are. Yet you can know yourself only as you are because that is all you can be sure of.
And here the word know might be better understood if it had a capital K. Yet you can know yourself only as you are. Because that is all you can be sure of. Continue.
Everything else is open to question.
And that's what's important. Until you're awake, you need to look at even these beautiful lilacs and be open to question. What is the true meaning? What is really going on there that is so beautiful to the eye and so delicious to the nose? You need to let everything be open to question so that your mutually agreed upon definitions don't get in the way of discovering the more of what is really there than what you're currently seeing. I wish to see the wholeness of God right there where the lilacs are. That's how you keep it open to question. What you do is you question your agreed upon definitions by reaching beyond them. You cast doubt upon what you're so sure of with the desire to have truth replace your perception. Okay.
The ego is the questioning aspect of the post-separation self, which was made rather than created.
And you could say made up. Fantasy. Imagination. Continue.
It is capable of asking questions, but not of perceiving meaningful answers, because these would involve knowledge and cannot be perceived.
Indeed. And in fact, if all of you are honest with yourselves, even in your prayers, your asking of the question, your making the request, becomes more important than the answer. And you state and restate and justify and explain your question endlessly, rather than saying, I would like to know the truth about this, Father, and then shutting up and listening until you get the answer. Continue.
The mind is therefore confused, because only one-mindedness can be without confusion. A separated or divided mind must be confused.
Okay, now, this could sound like an indictment on your very state of existence, but it is important to accept this as the truth. A separated or divided mind must be confused. And since you are not awake, you must accept the fact that you are experiencing confusion. If you do not arrive at a point where you're able to consider that to be the truth, you will not recognize that there is a call for correction. And so this isn't an indictment on you, it's the provision of a bit of information which is essential to your acknowledging that something is missing from your experience, and that that lack needs to be fulfilled, it needs to be corrected. And until you recognize that, you won't call anything into question. You will constantly confirm and reconfirm and reconfirm your current definitions. And you will do your best to live your life under the terms of those definitions. So, to recognize intellectually that everything you are experiencing is really an inadequate experience of reality, and that there is more to reality than you are experiencing. And then becoming inquisitive to see the more that's there, to experience God in the lilacs, to experience the meaning of love and beauty and truth that God is embodying, and it looks like lilacs. That is what will open you up to a certain receptivity that can be filled, infilled by God, helping bring you back into your right mind. So a separated or divided mind must be confused. And because you are not awake, you are confused, but not lost. And you could say that you have been lost as long as you didn't know you were confused. Because if you didn't know you were confused, you didn't know there was a call for correction, and you thought it's just the way everything was, and therefore you were stuck. So this is good news, essential news. And it ties in with what we've discussed about the necessity to be able to discern between truth and error, truth and illusion. You see, you have to be able to discern the difference, make the distinction, because without the ability to make the distinction, you're stuck in whatever your current mutually agreed upon definitions are. Okay, continue.
Can I ask a question?
You may.
So the discernment, and first we're questioning what's the lilac, and then that discernment, and that going along with what you used to say is acknowledging what's real, and that's right there with the atonement.
Absolutely.
And then that's the first steps of moving into creativity out of perception.
Indeed.
The doorway.
That is correct. It's also been called the little willingness.
It's a batch file. I mean, you do the one thing and it all executes.
Indeed. Yes. Okay. Go ahead, Michael.
I caught you saying that you must learn the discernment between truth and illusion.
Yes.
This is learned by constantly turning back to the altar and asking the Father.
Absolutely.
And that's how the discernment. That's really, to me, that's not indicative of me becoming able to discern. It's constantly giving my will over to the Father. So by continuing this practice on and on, do you come to the point where you're able to discern?
You come to a point where you could say you find yourself knowing with the Father.
So it's like a joining. Eventually
it is. You
begin joining with the Father so that it begins permeating the veil, so to speak.
Exactly. And then the act of an independent one joining with the Father begins to fade and yield to the Father being all there is of you. And it's no longer a you joining with the Father, or a you being creative, or a you having achieved true creativity, because that still suggests a separation.
It's more like a dissolving into.
That is correct. Although that does not constitute a loss of the experience of individuality. And we will not go into that at this time, but there is conscious individuality that is not in any way separate from God. Okay. Yes.
Douglas from Australia asks, we've been discussing sickness in the body in the TGP forum, and he wonders, can you help him deal with the discomfort in his mind he feels between knowing or trying to know sickness is not real, and as a paramedic having to deal with daily with the seeming reality of both sickness and the body?
Ah, yes. Well, your job, Douglas, is like mine. I am constantly, even at this moment, dealing with people who are experiencing sickness of the body or the mind, or suffering from mistakes or accidents and so on. But the point is not that your confrontation with these dynamics makes them real, but that they provide you with the ongoing opportunity to cut through the presentation, the appearance. by virtue of your willingness to go within and to ask for the Father's point of view, what is the divine truth of this individual right now? And you know what? You may find that as a paramedic, you will never end up with anyone needing to actually be delivered to a hospital, because they will have been healed on the way. Do not see these things as challenges, but rather ongoing opportunities for you to relinquish your definitions and the generally accepted definitions of such circumstances, so that you might be the agent for change that heals, where transformation, regeneration, and redemption occur on the spot. In the meantime, if transformation, regeneration, and redemption do not occur instantaneously, you value and appreciate your having the opportunity to take every step possible, let us say through physical means, to allow for regeneration and healing to occur, whether that requires surgery, the setting of bones, or whatever. The point is, do not fret yourself over the presentation that seems to say that reality must be otherworldly and doesn't apply here. I know that in spite of the confusion all of you are experiencing, it isn't true. It isn't real. It isn't a challenge to me. It's simply the ongoing opportunity to reflect back to you the truth. Because I have gone to the Father to ask of the truth about you. And if you seem not to get it right away, I do not ask myself how I'm failing because you didn't see it instantaneously. And I hang in there with you as you adjust to the best of your ability and as quickly as you're able to allow yourself to let go of self-control and yield to the authority and omnipotence of the Father, so that you can let the Father be all there is of you, and you are not holding on to a right to a private perception of yourself. And thus blinding yourself to your awakening, your already existing and living perfection. Okay.
A separated or divided mind must be confused. It is necessarily uncertain about what it is.
Because it isn't anything at all. It's an imagination. It can't be certain of what it is because there ain't no such critter.
It has to be in conflict because it is out of accord with itself. This makes its aspects strangers to each other. And this is the essence of the fear-prone condition in which attack is always possible. You have every reason to feel afraid as you perceive yourself.
Why? Because you're so horrible? No, because you're not looking with the Father. You're looking at everything from a state of isolation. What is fearful is the dissonance you feel because of this totally unnaturally adopted perspective that you are choosing to believe is true. And in feeling disconnected from the Father, from your essential capital I integrity, you cannot help but feel uneasy. I've talked before about the fact that this uneasiness is your immovable, unchangeable sanity, letting you know that you're off the beam. Why? Not so that you can feel guilty for it, but so that you can get back on the beam. As you perceive yourself, or as you perceive anything by yourself, you cannot help but be experiencing it in a state of fear, because looking at it by yourself is not only unnatural, it's actually impossible. And the attempt to do the impossible has a feeling to it, an uncomfortable feeling. It tells you that you are doing something utterly unnatural that you cannot actually succeed at. Continue.
This is why you cannot escape from fear until you realize that you did not and could not create yourself.
There you go. And therefore, this you that is feeling afraid, or this you that seems to be bound by its definitions, doesn't even exist. Now that's the bottom line of your healing, whatever the healing is that's needed. Because if you can't do it, and it hasn't been done, then you are not bound. And whatever you felt bound by can and must vanish without any process to it, without refining your soul and living a few more lifetimes, inching your way up the spiritual ladder. There ain't no such you to go anywhere, and that's the bottom line. Continue.
You can never make your perceptions, your misperceptions, true, and your creation is beyond your own error. That is why you must eventually choose to heal the separation.
Indeed. And it's really, if you think about what's being said and what we've been talking about, it's really very basic and very simple. When you're uncomfortable, you're on the wrong track. And it means get back on the right track. It means you're trying to do something that's impossible. Stop wasting your time. That's all it means. And so, when you find yourself suffering, whether it's mild or whether it's severe, it simply means turn back toward the altar. Inquire of God to know what the truth is, rather than valuing and validating your own definitions and the definitions that you have agreed to with everyone else. Isn't it obvious that if this, which is experiencing misperceptions, having its own private perspective, were real, were valid, it wouldn't have to gather around itself a bunch of others to get mutual agreement in order to secure the truth of what he's believing, because there are numbers of others who agree. The awakened sonship does not indulge in mutual agreements with each other. You might say that the sonship mutually agrees with the Father and yields to the Father. But as I said, once yielding to the Father occurs, there's no longer any sense of separate identity of one in agreement with God. And unity, oneness, is the truth known that has no opposite, and therefore nothing experienced needing correction. And that can come in glimpses. And when it does, you have instantaneous healing. And Douglas, you can look forward to having the experience of instantaneous healing occur as you're driving that person to a hospital for care. Continue.
Right-mindedness is not to be confused with the knowing mind, because it is applicable only to right perception. You can be right-minded or wrong-minded, and even this is subject to degrees, clearly demonstrating that knowledge is not involved.
Or you could say clearly demonstrating that knowing, with a capital K, is not involved. I am not correcting what's here. I'm implementing an understanding of the meaning. Continue.
The term right-mindedness is properly used as the correction for wrong-mindedness and applies to the state of mind that induces accurate perception.
Yes, you see, right-mindedness is a stepping stone to the direct experience of truth. But you have to be able to make the distinction between right-mindedness and wrong-mindedness. And that's why I encouraged you last week that when you see someone during your day who appears not to be well, don't just let it pass by and say, oh, poor dear, she needs to be home in bed. Or, boy, I'm glad I'm not in her shoes today. Or whatever. Correct it. Recognize immediately that this is illegitimate, it's not the truth, that's right-mindedness. And then ask to know what the truth is. And that doesn't mean you have to stop in the middle of your activities and take a half hour to listen and wait for the answer and interrupt the flow of your day. But it means don't let these little moments, these little opportunities to recognize the call for correction, don't miss those opportunities and take advantage of them. Because as I said, every time you do that and express right-mindedness, it's the little bit of leaven that leavens the whole. And then as you proceed on with your activities, you can still be listening, because ultimately what you want is not just right-mindedness. The acknowledgement. Wow, that's illegitimate about her. I don't join in the idea that I'm being invited to join with. That's not the truth about her. And then go on to do your things and say, Father, I would like to experience the truth about her. You see? Yes.
Raj, is it appropriate also to ask for blessing for that one in travail?
You may, of course.
Well, the reason I'm asking is I encountered from time to time accidents along the freeway, and I encountered one the other day that was pretty severe. In other words, the person was on the ground, and as I was approaching it, my thought was to ask for a blessing for whatever was transpiring there.
Certainly, yes. But I want you all to do more than that. I want you to invite the direct experience within yourself of what the truth about that one is. I want you bringing everything that we're talking about and reading about here into the level of experience and not just a surface acknowledgement of an idea of truth. You can say, Father, please help them. But then say, Father, please help me to have a direct experience of the truth about them. You see?
Does that mean that you would experience the pain and suffering also they're going through? I mean,
that's not the truth.
Okay, that's not the truth. Then you, what you're asking for is to experience their wholeness along with your own.
Yes, you are asking for an experience of truth with a capital T. Not the truth of the human condition.
That's what I want to be clear on that.
The human condition is an illusion.
Right.
The accident, the injury, the suffering that appears to be going on there is an illusion. It's an illegitimate imposition upon that Christ, that divine one. And you want to know what the truth is about that divine one. When you ask to know the truth, you're never asking to know the truth about the human condition. Well, what is the condition of my liver? What's the truth about the condition of... Well, you have a perforated liver. Well, how much help is that? You don't want to know what the truth of a thing is according to the well-established, mutually agreed-upon definitions about everything. You don't really believe that that's what I've been talking about when I'm saying ask to know what the truth is here, because we're talking about correcting illusion. We're talking about correcting the ungodlike evidences of a human condition so that we might know the truth of the divine condition and have a direct experience of it so that it is a knowing of the truth. Because truth known is the conscious experience of nothing present to be corrected. And this is the important part, because I hear a lot of students of the Course and of metaphysics and so on saying the truth of the situation is that there's nothing needing to be corrected, and they leave it there without correction occurring.
Right.
When you ask for the Father to provide you with the direct experience of the truth about that one, your experience of it has the direct effect of causing transformation, regeneration, and redemption to actually occur so that you are no longer presented with the evidence of anything needing correcting, which means no more blood gushing out of a wound onto the ground, no more opening in the skin, perfect, flawless form, identifying the presence of that individuality perfectly, flawlessly.
But I'm understanding you're saying then it's healing in the manner that which you did when you were here 2,000 years ago. Now we will be doing the same. This is how it was happening.
That is how it was happening. And it was not, therefore, by virtue of some personal authority I had, different from any of you or any of my disciples or anyone in the communities we were in. It had to do with the fact that when you're not joining with the mutually agreed upon definitions of the crowd, of the neighborhood, of the community, of those in your synagogue or your church or your political group, and you are asking the Father what the truth is, you're turning to the altar, relying on something other than even your best knowledge. The experience is provided because you're joining with the Father. And there's an experience to it that you call knowing the truth. Not something you do mechanically. I'm going to sit down and know the truth for a while. And the truth is, God is all, and I am His Son, and therefore I must have been created perfect, because He is perfect, and you go through a logical process in your mind. You could call that knowing the truth. But that's not what I'm talking about. When you turn toward the altar and you are willing to abandon your best judgments, your best definitions, when you're willing to dismember yourself, give up your membership in the group that is making the mutually agreed upon definitions, and lean into the Father's point of view, then you will be infilled with the Father's point of view. And then you will find that you know the truth from the tips of your toes, from the bottom of the depths of your being. And it's unalterable and unequivocal, and there's nothing unlike it. And that is when the transformation, regeneration, redemption occurs. And remember that the word redemption means bringing back to its original form or its original state. So redemption of a broken limb, redemption of an injury, redemption of a sick body is for it to be brought in back into its original state of being the visibility and tangibility of your individuality. And your individuality is God expressed right there as you. And so, the transformation, regeneration, and redemption is a way of describing God being glorified in slow motion, as though it were happening in time. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. What I'm hearing you say is that once we do this, we reach within, we turn to the altar, we go into our heart and ask with no pre-thought about anything, but ask, really ask, then we're convicted in that moment of the truth.
By the truth, yes.
And then we expect a miracle, meaning...
No, the miracle's already done.
Well, okay, but to see the transformation...
Forget about expecting a miracle. You can expect, you can have the attitude of expecting a miracle in the recognition or the willingness to see that if you'll turn toward the altar, transformation, regeneration, and redemption will occur.
We know that ahead of time.
Right.
Okay.
That you could say that an attitude of expecting a miracle is right-mindedness.
Oh, okay, so being in that state already.
So that being in that state already means that there will be a willingness on your part to turn toward the altar and desire to have an experience of truth that is described as knowing the truth. Because the truth has been revealed to you. Because you have desired to have the revelation, and you've desired to have the revelation, and you will allow the revelation to occur because you are willing to abandon your allegiance to your best definitions and your pet theories. And as I said, the pleasure of the sociability that you experience with everyone who's in agreement with the mutually agreed upon definitions. In other words, sometimes it causes you to have to let go of a circle of friends. Because there has to be a shift of allegiance from making other people happy to God.
I really appreciate you emphasizing and taking time with this very important point.
You are welcome.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
To take this one step further, if we can. How literal, at the human level, will the miracle manifest if one person driving down the freeway sees an accident, asks for the Father, shuts up, asks to see it as the Father would have it, have us see it, wait for the answer? Could one expect to be able to drive off the freeway, go to the hospital, and see the person whole?
One might see the person actually sit up and stand up right there beside the car in which they had the accident.
Does it take more than one person asking to see it to create the miracle?
No, it does not.
If no one asks, does the human condition continue? I'm not trying to be provocative.
No. If no one realizes that there's a call for correction, if everyone thinks this is just the way life is, and no one asks, then they will stay committed to their current definition. This is just the way life is. That phrase is a definition. If you think this is just the way life is, you will be bound by that phrase, the meaning of those words. You're saying, there is nothing more. Nothing more than this is possible.
But is it the Father's will that be the situation just because we're not...
Absolutely not, because, mind you, that the one who's sitting there saying... There's nothing more to life than this. This is just life.
Is this the victim of the person, there are no victims, but is this the individual was in the accident?
No, I am speaking of the person driving by. The person driving by says, that's life, or that's death. That's just the way things are. If nobody asks, if nobody recognizes that this is a perception rather than a knowing, in other words, that it's a misperception of reality, if one doesn't recognize that this is a misperception of reality, one won't ask to see more of what reality truly is. And without asking for more, that one stays in his isolated, separated frame of reference, and he's bound by it. And unless the individual who was in the accident, who's lying on the ground, asks God himself, there won't be any change for him. You need to ask for your brothers. You need to ask to know the truth about them, for them. Not only because it will bless them, but because you're caring enough to do that means that you're willing to abandon your separate, independent point of view that keeps you asleep.
To take it one step further for clarification.
Yes.
If I am to go home and ask to see my partner as perfect and whole, and she is to also do that, if there is still a need for an operation because the doctors think it's needed, have we failed to ask or hear what the Father said? If we asked with a lot of willingness, not just a little, I mean, just how healing can we... How much willingness does one need to create the suggestion you've been giving, you know? I mean, who wouldn't do it?
Did you want to answer?
Is it relative? Is it an addition to his question?
It is. It's something that happened to me. I watched a really violent movie last week, American History X. And there's a scene that, when I was going to bed that night, was replaying in my mind. It was disturbing to me. And even though you don't see the outcome in the film, it's the outcome of what happens to this person's head. But, you know it's really awful, right? And so as I was laying there, it was disturbing me so much. And I felt like, you know, I was tuning in with you and we were talking about it. And that I felt like you were showing me that if I was in, no, Raj, that I was talking to you, Raj, and that if I was in that situation, and that even if that person's head had been, you know, destroyed by another person's foot right in front of me, that there was a way that I could be in that situation that was so, it was like his head was whole, whatever it looked like, and if I was just willing to be there with it, it would all be different. And I felt like I had a completely different feeling inside of me, like it was completely restored. But it was the perception that was restored. It wasn't his head, you know. In other words, his head was whole, you know.
Yes.
And it was you saying, I could get with that. Despite this whole horrible drama that was unfolding, where people were upset and hurting each other and violent with one another. And it gave me like this tremendous peace to be able to go to sleep. And I don't know if I was just hearing what I wanted to hear, or if it was like a teaching, like an infilling kind of thing.
Oh, it was definitely a teaching. Yes. Now, whatever the situation is, whether the situation seems to call for surgery, or whether it's a relationship difficulty, whatever it is, always keep in mind that the potential is for an instantaneous correction, an instantaneous healing. I mean, in a fraction of a second. This is the potential, yes.
Okay.
This is the real, actual potential. You may never have come across somebody who has experienced an instantaneous healing, but they happen. And so, it doesn't matter whether it's a broken bone, a tooth that's half gone. It doesn't matter. Instantaneously, correction can occur. Really. Down to earth, right here where you are today, or where you think you are, right here in the middle of the kingdom of heaven today, the potential is for all the sons and daughters of God that are here to have instantaneous breakthrough into the conscious experience of their divinity that will be experienced on the spot as redemption. And I don't mean spiritual redemption or psychological redemption. I mean redemption of bones, redemption of teeth, redemption of hair, redemption of the bringing back into the spiritual original of what God is being there, right where that one is. Now, you ask, how long should you be willing to persist if you don't see instantaneous healing? Well, try persisting as long as I have. And what I mean by that is, that's a very long time, as you count time. But you know what? What better thing do you have to do? Infinite patience brings immediate results. When there is no impatience present any longer, then what you are doing, you do because it's what you're being. And you could say that the doing that took perseverance, you now do just because there's nothing else more important, nothing else you'd rather do than to be intent upon glorifying God in everything you see, and glorifying God by desiring to see God there instead of what your well-developed definitions tell you are there. They're not just yours. Your scientists think in terms of mathematical equations, numbers, digits. And so their definition of form, which is really the substance of spirit, reflects the sieve, the filter, that they're looking at it through. And that has become part of your definition of things, that your body is matter, that everything you see is matter, and that matter is subject to decay and change, and that it is vulnerable, and blah, blah, blah. And so you take them as authority, and you agree with them, and that's part of your mutually agreed upon definition. But if you're willing to look at every form and consider the possibility that its substance is pure energy and that the energy is spirit, capital S, spirit, one of the definitions of God, that will open up the windows of heaven to you. Because then you can become curious to know what it really is, with an expectation that what you will discover will be wonderful. And it's easy to be willing to discover wonderful things. You don't resist discovering wonderful things. And the way I'm talking right now is right-mindedness. It doesn't accomplish the goal, but it sets you in the right direction and allows curiosity to be present so that you can dare to abandon your acquired best definitions that have given you a feeling of security and turn toward the altar, the unknown, what you're not sure of yet, so that you can ask to be infilled with what you don't know yet and have the experience, the direct experience of truth. And so you persist. You persist because that is the only way to wake up. That's the only way to come back into your right mind. That's the only way to undo the separation that you believe you accomplished but never did.
To hear or see the truth, know the truth as the Father would have us in a specific situation, and have a willingness that's more than just a little willingness, and not confounding it by keep defining it and saying, Father, this is the way it is, you know, but just continue with the prayer, the holding the thought, let me see it as you would have me see it.
Now,
being patient.
Let me just say this. Don't continue with that thought over and over and over and over. You've got to express the thought and then shut up.
And listen forever.
Yeah, and listen, yes. And so, maybe occasionally renew the question, but let there be longer periods of willing attentiveness to the answer.
Okay.
Now, there's one other aspect here. If you don't seem to have instantaneous healing, then be willing to hear from your guidance that it's appropriate for the nearest approximation of transformation, regeneration, and redemption to occur, which might involve surgery at this point. Because that's the closest, within the mutually agreed upon definitions of what everything is, that everyone has been able to get to where there can be a manifestation of transformation, regeneration, and redemption. Now, if in the surgery some part of the body is removed, there's redemption is still necessary. Well, what's necessary must be possible. And so, when awakening occurs, let me just put it this way, everything that might seem to have been taken away through processes that were lesser approximations of wholeness and completeness, or lesser attempts to arrive at healing through surgery or whatever, those things that were missing will be there, will be returned. The redemption of what identifies your presence, your individuality perfectly, will be whole, the redemption will be complete. And so if there was a finger that was lost or a leg that was lost, it will be present. And you don't have to wait until you die to find them returned to you. I was going to say, my God, be willing to expect a miracle. And that's what it, I mean, let your definition of miracle include that kind of embodiment of God's perfection in a moment, in an instant, and not as something that must take lifetimes to refine your soul to come back into the full experience of.
So the process of removal that allows life at the human level could be the miracle, even though that's not the way we would want to see it.
That is correct. If you must read to connect with the truth and that will heal, and your vision is so poor that you can't read, then get glasses and say thank you for the glasses that allow you to read so that you can read the truth that will promote the transformation that will heal your eyes. Getting the glasses is not redemption, but it allows for redemption to occur.
So turning to the altar, asking to see it, and being at peace with the removal or surgery could be the Father's answer to my, let me see it as you would have me see it. The peace, the level of peace.
There's a statement, divine love always has met and always will meet every human need. The simple fact is that because you never left the kingdom of heaven and you never stopped being the Christ, you never stopped being the place where God is presencing himself, the truth about you, your wholeness, the truth about you that you are loved, the truth about you that you were never abandoned, remains the truth, you might say, right in the middle of your dream. And so, because it is the nature and function of your being to fulfill itself perfectly, you will find the means within the dream for your needs to be met as you come back home. And so, you say, Father, I've asked to be infilled with the direct experience of your presence in her or in him, and I'm not seeing it. And humanly speaking, there's a need that needs to be addressed because she's bleeding to death, or such and such a thing is keeping normal functions from occurring. And there is a need for correction at some level. I'm not seeing it in terms of instantaneous healing. Should we take steps, humanly speaking, to secure the ongoingness of her life so that together we can continue to ask and have the experience of complete redemption, which would mean the reappearance of what seemed to be lost surgically? Yes.
Without the reproduction of the removed part.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Good night.
A long time ago, Raj, you said to me when I was beginning to make my transformation to a practitioner of the healing arts to be the transparency and not to take the responsibility for. And so whenever I feel like I really want this to happen, I really want this healing to happen, I recognize that it's me taking responsibility and that I need to let that go so that whatever truly should happen in the divine sense can take place.
That's right, because any intent you have that you become intense about becomes an opaqueness and a lack of transparency that disallows for God's love to flow through you because you wish to be the servant of the Father's will. You cannot be willful about another's healing. You must be willing to allow it. And in order for that to happen, you have to get out of the way as an ego, having a want.
It will stop it.
Pardon?
It will stop it.
Yes. Because at the bottom line, what the ego wants is, it wants to have healing at its hand. When you want it to be evident that you accomplished it.
For credit.
Exactly. And that's where the opaqueness is. Okay.
It is miracle-minded because it heals misperception. And this is indeed a miracle in view of how you perceive yourself.
Right-mindedness is miracle-minded because it heals misperception. It heals misperception because its result is that you become infilled with the direct experience of truth. And this is indeed a miracle in view of how you perceive yourself. So the interesting thing is that the correct perception of yourself at the moment is that there's no you to have a perception at all. And that your assertion that you do exist as something capable of having perceptions of reality is a pure illusion, a mistake, a confusion calling for correction. And so, at the bottom line, what we've been talking about today points to the need to open up to your source, so that which really constitutes your presence, which is God, might find room in your conscious experience of being to be the illuminating presence of your mind and reveal Himself in you as you. And thus open you up to the experience of reality, of the kingdom of heaven, of unalterable perfection, and cause you to wake up. Mind you, in the process, in the experience of the kingdom of heaven that's currently being called the human experience, rather than the kingdom of heaven, you will appear to be an agent for change, and your brothers and sisters will be healed, and you will find yourself healed. But the improvement of the human condition is not the goal. The improvement of the human condition is always the manifestation of God occurring, demonstrating that God is with you as an experience of being loved. And that experience of God loving you illuminates for you your divinity, again, at an experiential level of knowing, which transforms your mind and opens the door for more and more influx of the conscious experience of truth. And so, in a way, it's a self-fulfilling movement of awakening. And this is just the beginning of this section. There's more good stuff coming. But we will end here for today. Thank you.
Thank you.